The Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 15th day of May, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news on the Hill, some in the House want to rewrite provisions of the renewable fuel standards that regulate biofuels. And Secretary of Ag Vilsack is pleased U.S. EPA will allow an independent review of greenhouse gas emissions from the production of those same biofuels. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll take you through the U of I ag economist Daryl Good's view of the midpoint average cash prices received by farmers USDA released this week. And as we close out this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here at the Illinois State Water Survey on the U of I campus. It all comes to you courtesy of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago, on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby July wheat at $5.77.5, a loss today, down 15 and 3 quarters. September at 6.04, 15 and 3 quarters lower. And December wheat at 6.26 and a quarter, down 15 and 3 quarters. The harvest month July Kansas wheat for the hard red downs 13 and a quarter at $6.30.5. From the corn pit back in Chicago, $4.17 and a quarter, the settlement price for the lead option July, down 11 cents. The May has expired. September at 4.26 and three quarters, down 10 and three quarters. And December corn at 4.38 and a half, down 10 and three quarters. March futures 4.49, down 11 and three quarters. May 2010 at 4.56 and a quarter, down 11 and three quarters. July soybean futures $11.30 and a half, down 17. The August at 10.85, 13 and a half lower. And September 10.23 and a quarter, down 17 and one quarter. November beans $9.75 and three quarters, down 16 and a quarter. January at $9.78 and a half, down 17 cents. July bean meal at $3.58.20, down $4.10. July bean oil at $37.90, down 94 cents. June live cattle futures from the CME Group, $82.37 and a half, 42 and a half lower. The August at $82.52 and a half, down 32 and a half. May feeders down 25 cents at $99 even. And June live hogs at $66.52 and a half, 47 and a half cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what's happening in the outside markets. June crude oil at this hour, a settlement price, of course, at $56.34. That's down $2.28 a barrel. July at $57 even, down $2.42. June ethanol at $1.67.8, down 3.8 on the afternoon. Natural gas, June contract at $4.09.8, down 19.4 of a cent. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.68.4, 3.9 lower. June heating oil futures, that's diesel fuel, at $1.42.3, down 7.1 cents. And June propane futures are 0.8 cents higher at $71.1 on their settlement price. Gold futures at $930.90 settled down $2.90 an ounce. And the Dow currently trading at 82.47 is just about 84 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 83.02. is up 0.74 on the afternoon. And the CRB index at 236.24 is down 5.5. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like tonight from our own Mike Sola. He says mostly cloudy skies, showers, a few thunderstorms this evening. Strong to severe storms and locally heavy rainfall likely, especially during the evening hours. Lows this evening will range from 45 in northwestern Illinois to 66 in the southern parts of Indiana. Tomorrow in the far south, cloudy, a few showers, they'll diminish during the afternoon. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny, highs tomorrow from 60 in the north to 76 in the far southern parts of Indiana. Rain will continue. It will come to an end in most locations by Saturday afternoon. High pressure, hey, there's one. High pressure will build into the region, providing a welcome string of dry days. The next best chance for rain does not appear until late next week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Mike Zuzolo is on the line, as he is each and every Friday. He's at Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd. How you doing today, sir?
Well, I'm doing really well, except that when I walked in this afternoon, Friday's a really busy day in the College of Aces, or the Agricultural College, for me. I walked in, took a look at the marketplace, and was just bedeviled by all the red that I saw on the screen. What happened?
You wanted to walk back out, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
I think a lot of our clients and our producers want to do the exact same thing, but what are they going to go walk out into a mud puddle?
You know, well,
it is. It's like being slapped in the face and then being slapped on the other side of the face.
Well,
you know?
They got a nice tractor to get into, but I don't know whether they want to get it that muddy or not.
Drive down the road in the tractor, yeah. Well, I think, unfortunately, you know, we talked about it this morning a little bit, Todd, that the market was lining up pretty nicely as long as the dollar remained contained. We've seen a lot of buying of foreign currencies, commodity currencies like Brazilian currency and other emerging markets, Canadian currencies, currencies that are associated with hard assets. And as a result of that, the dollar's fallen. The big push in that was the idea that all of a sudden, the market's healed, the economy's improving, the lows are in, and remember the decoupling mindset everybody had a few months ago. Well, that's kind of back in fashion, and they thought, well, the emerging markets are kind of come back around and lead us out of the hole. So they started buying emerging markets, selling the dollar, and it got a little bit overweighted. I mean, it got a lot overweighted, I guess, compared to what kind of economic data we've been getting out of some of the economies of the world. And so we've been on pins and needles ever since report day on the dollar because it's found a support level. And many technicians are saying, well, this is just a midpoint. It's going to go a whole new level lower. Some of the fundamentalists out there are saying, look, we're going to bottom here because the dollar is going to return as a safe haven. And unfortunately, by the time we got to lunchtime, the dollar was looked upon more as a safe haven. It bounced, made new highs. The S&P made new lows. The crude oil made new lows, pushed most of the commodities, you know, pretty much a commodity-wide sell-off, copper, cotton, crude, natural gas down almost 5% right now. So it was just a commodity-wide sell-off, and I think it has, unfortunately, very, very little to do with the micro fundamentals, especially for the corn, and that's what's so difficult about this price action for central and eastern Corn Belt farmers right now.
Well, let's take up the dollar just a bit. Which do you subscribe to?
It's hard. I'm more of a fundamentalist, but I realize based upon our research, and even the Federal Reserve did a report back, and I think it was 2001 or 2004, talking about the word bedevil, the dollar is a bedeviling commodity or complex to try and forecast, and they themselves admit that in the short term, meaning 1 to 2 year spans, technicals usually work better than fundamentals. But in this situation, I'm more of a fundamentalist because I do believe that the safe haven bias and the safe haven sentiment and trader psychology is still at a fever pitch, or at least at a pitch, maybe not a fever pitch, but the England GDP from the Bank of England, much worse than they estimated 3 months ago. The Euro region first quarter GDP, worse than what they had thought a month ago. Hong Kong even was down another 3% in terms of their estimates for GDP, down a negative 5.5% to 6.5% based upon their government statistics that they released this week. So you had retail sales here in the United States, even China. Their April exports were down 22% in value versus a year ago. That's the sixth straight month lower for their exports. And whether you're a bull in China or a bear in China, we all agree that China needs to export to be able to make their money in terms of a GDP in their economy. So I would say I'm more of a fundamentalist right now.
So you're thinking strong dollar. Is this the reason you think USDA, in its Tuesday reports, pegged the average cash price, despite a 1.1 billion bushel carryout for next year, a dime lower than they did for this year?
I do indeed, and I think that goes in the face of increasing ethanol usage that they project. And,
right.
and the Department of Energy backs up with their short-term outlook. They're looking at summer blending of ethanol over 5% better than last year at this time. I think it flies in the face because of that and also because of the burdensome wheat supplies that we're going to be dealing with here in terms of what they expect and what they forecast. Burdensome meaning, you know, 35 to 50% more than what we had back in 2007 if their 09-2010 estimates are right.
Well, I was thinking that many of the traders we talked to were turning the corner, and they were wanting the marketplace to go higher. Are you in that group or a neutral to bearish group?
Well, I think we'd say you can't overpower the macro fundamentals at this point because the currency market's just too big. And I will be very plain spoken about the currencies in China. I really think, and I think there's people in Chicago that would buy into this too, but they're few and far between. I really think China has been buying hard assets and diversifying out of the dollar as long as the dollar drops. I think the minute or close to the minute after the dollar bottoms, if it does indeed bottom here, the Chinese will stop buying hard assets because why would they want to start letting go of their dollar assets and their at a low price? And why not wait for another move up in the dollar and then start buying hard assets again? So to me, China's not buying because their demand's so great. They're stockpiling because they want to diversify into hard assets. So that's where the outside markets and the dollar, I think, have a lot more weight to them than the micro fundamentals. So we kind of look at it this way. The beans are overvalue. The wheat is overvalue. The corn, if it breaks, will be going into an undervalue level, and we'll buy the break in the corn. We still recommend hedging beans, defending in the old crop. We are reluctant to sell any 08 corn or 09 corn because we feel like this break in corn should set us up for another move higher. So we're actually going to buy a dollar-led break in the corn market here.
I've got one more question for you. Are you dividing the way you deal with Eastern Corn Belt and Western Corn Belt producers at this point for corn?
We have to. It's amazing how happy the Iowa people are. We get on and it's sad to have to say that. I don't relish saying that at all, but it's sad because when we get on a conference call in Chicago every morning, we talk to the IBs out west. Their clients are seeing one of the best years they've had in probably five right now in terms of weather and their crop stands. And so, yes, you have to do that. I think it all boils back to with the corn and the weather and the east versus the west. Let's just keep watching the basis. If the end user gets nervous, it's going to show up in the 08 basis and the 08 demand for cash corn. If that happens, then I think the Chicago sentiment will change very rapidly. And that may actually be able to overpower some of the outside market forces. I was digging into a great technician and fundamentalist, John Murphy, who's been around a long time on CNBC, written a lot of books. He has very nice charts that indicate that in the agricultural complex especially, the summertime micro fundamentals can really overpower and outstrip the macro fundamentals if they're bearish. And so I think that's where corn plays a role. I think that's where that cash basis plays a role. If the corn can overpower the dollar and then these outside markets, I think it'll be in the form of the basis.
All right. So if the outside markets are bearish is what you're saying. And,
correct.
And then we have bullish fundamentals. A crop that didn't get planted, prolonged dry period in the summertime or really hot during the time that we're pollinating in the eastern corn belt or something like that, that those types of fundamentals could overpower whatever is happening in the outside markets.
As the crop year goes on and gets worse for corn, farmers are going to be more reluctant to sell while end users become more needy of filling pipeline supplies. If those two can come to a point and hit in the form of a cash basis, then yes, I think they can overpower those outside forces.
Well, here's a bit of advice for you. When you start calling your clients next week, line them up so that you call an Iowa or Minnesota producer every time after you've talked to somebody in the Eastern Corn Belt. You'll feel better that way.
Well, I call my Western guys at night because if I call my Eastern guys at night, they're already liquored up. So I can't talk to them.
Oh, God.
Or I'm liquored up.
All right. I'll let you go on
Thanks,
that
Bob.
One. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us from his office there each and every Friday afternoon to talk about the agricultural commodity markets.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Hey, in just a moment, Dave Dickey will be here. He'll take us through all the ag news for the afternoon. If you miss our radio broadcast, can't get to our website at willag.org, try this number, 217-333-3434. We update it with a bit of the numbers and some analysis at 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day of the year.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee leaders are spearheading an effort with 42 other congressmen to rewrite provisions in the renewable fuels standard that would place limits on how the Environmental Protection Agency can regulate biofuels. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson and Ranking Member Frank Lucas introduced legislation yesterday that would eliminate the requirement that the EPA consider indirect land use when calculating the greenhouse gas emissions associated with advanced biofuels. Meanwhile, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says he is pleased there will be an independent review of the EPA conclusion that U.S. corn and soy-based biofuels do not reduce greenhouse gases as much as previously believed. The EPA's calculations that most corn-based ethanol only cut greenhouse gas emissions by about 16% and soy-based biodiesel by about 22% means that, as it now stands, that ethanol from new production facilities and all biodiesel facilities would not qualify for government production mandates. Existing and under construction ethanol plants would qualify, grandfathered in by Congress. The reason the biofuels did not meet those levels of reduction, according to USDA and EPA officials, was primarily because the EPA calculated indirect land use, which takes into account factors like how much virgin land in the U.S. and in foreign countries is converted into cropland as a result of the U.S. using corn and soybeans to make fuel. Also on Wednesday, Vilsack said that he was unsure if Congress would continue to fund an animal traceback program that has yielded minimal results so far. Vilsack says, quote, "We have got to do a better job of convincing the folks that fund this that it's a worthy investment." The Obama administration has asked Congress for $14.61 million for the traceback program in fiscal year 2010, nearly unchanged from $14.5 million in fiscal year 2009. USDA is reviewing the traceback program, including whether it should remain voluntary or become mandatory. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Have you visited our website lately? It's willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find USDA reports. They're located about halfway down the page. You know, they came out on Tuesday of this week. If you're wondering a bit more about those numbers and you'd like to see them in an easy-to-use format, USDA's reports at willag.org are a great place to head to. Halfway down the page, hit the USDA button. By the way, while you're there, you can also listen to Commodity Week. I'll record that this afternoon at 4:30. It's our weekly look at what happened in the marketplace, and we'll recap some of those numbers from the USDA reports this week. Commodity Week has its own button, too. We'll post it to the website at willag.org by about 5 o'clock, actually 6 o'clock this evening. We record at 4:30, but it's a place where you can go hear that program anytime you'd like, or before it even airs on our home radio station, all at willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, corn farmers are hoping for a May planting date in Illinois, but looking at a calendar that may force them into the month of June. Yet the trade in Chicago has not begun to really worry about the lateness of the season. I'll have more with ag economist Daryl Good at the U of I, who wonders whether that might be a mistake. When you ask University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good about the delayed corn planting in his state and the rest of the eastern Corn Belt, he laughs a bit uneasily. Good, in a wry moment, says he thinks traders setting the price of corn in Chicago are relying too much on last year's performance and not enough on past year's performances.
It just underscores the tremendous importance now of summer weather, assuming that we do get the crop planted here in a reasonable time frame. I'm wondering if the market is not a little too complacent based on last year's experience, that the market got real excited about planting delays and replanting last year. And as it turned out, those concerns were unfounded because we had a near-perfect summer growing season. And as the agronomists point out, that favorable weather extended right into September last year. So we had a good July, a reasonable August, and a very good September, and the crop turned out to be fairly large. This year, there doesn't seem to be a lot of excitement early about planting delays, and maybe we're making the opposite mistake this year, that maybe we should be a little more concerned. Can we really count on another perfect summer in 2009 like we had in 2008?
Maybe so, says Darrell Good doubtfully. He thinks there is more risk than the market perceives right now to the size of the 2009 corn crop.
And as folks are fond of pointing out, and I think rightfully so, that the later the planting, the later the pollination and filling of the corn crop, and that pushes you later into the growing season, which is typically a warmer part of the growing season. Who knows how the actual weather will turn out, but odds favor less favorable conditions in late July and early August than during the first half of July.
Here's the short translation on that one. It will take a perfect July to repeat last year's very, very good corn crop. USDA supply and demand figures fell out like this on the 12th day of May. That was Tuesday of this week. They now say 85 million acres of corn will be planted. We already knew that number. The yield, the first time we've seen this number, at 155.4 bushels to the acre, is actually 1.5 bushels to the acre more than last season. The ending stocks for the current season have been lowered by 100 million bushels to 1.6, and that puts the ending stocks for the fall of 2010 at 1.145 billion bushels, are down by 28.4%. Yet USDA has put the average cash corn price for the coming year at $4.10 on its midpoint. That's a dime below the average cash price for the current marketing year. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg about the agricultural weather forecast for the weekend and next week.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich has told a Chicago radio show he thinks there will be a formal inquiry into House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's accusation that the CIA misled Congress on waterboarding. Speaking on WOLS this morning, Gingrich says he believes CIA officials when they say Pelosi was told about waterboarding in a 2002 briefing. Pelosi said Thursday that Congress was told about waterboarding but was assured that the technique wasn't being used. Gingrich says Pelosi's accusations about the CIA, quote, smeared the men and women who risked their lives to protect this country. He says the flap wouldn't cost Pelosi her post, but that her credibility is rapidly diminishing. Illinois Department of Public Health is reporting 636 confirmed cases of swine flu or H1N1 virus and two probable cases. The bulk of the cases are in and around Chicago. Meanwhile, Indiana State Health Department says 59 of the 71 confirmed cases in the state involve people aged 24 and younger. One new case was reported today in northern Porter County. The health department says 25 cases are in northern Indiana, while 46 others are in central Indiana. A proposal to relocate a Casey's General Store just outside Urbana city limits, seeing its share of opposition from apartment tenants and residents of a trailer park in the area. One of them says the extended hours, alcohol sales, and nuisance behavior associated with a convenience store has prompted her to hire an attorney blocking the move. A Casey's attorney has offered to change fencing and lighting schemes. Champaign County's Zoning Board of Appeals will resume discussions on the matter late next month. And as University of Illinois students who rent apartments prepare to head home, the property maintenance supervisor with the city of Champaign says the property owners have been very good about cleaning up the excess trash the last few years. Susan Salzman says the city hasn't had to levy a fee against an owner since shortly after enforcement efforts were enacted in 2005. The city issues notices on any campus apartment building with an overflowing dumpster and will require the $100 fee plus labor expenses if they aren't cleaned up in the allotted time period. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. And Steve Hilberg joins us from the Illinois State Water Survey and the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. It belongs to NOAA, where he's the director there. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, you're going to tell me about a much better weather forecast for at least next week, if not the weekend, I hope.
Yeah, it looks like once we get through, sunrise tomorrow, I think it does look like things will be substantially improving across Illinois and much of the Midwest. As everybody knows, we've been extremely wet from southern Missouri to much of the north or the southeastern half of Illinois, most of Indiana. All standing water everywhere. We've got flood warnings out. And it's pouring rain now up in northwestern Illinois where they've, at least radar indications are for 3 to 5 inches. I think that's probably a little overdone on the radar, but nevertheless, it's been a lot of rain and there's more rain to come. The good news is once this system moves out, which it'll be gradually leaving the southern parts of Illinois and Indiana tomorrow morning, it looks like high pressure is going to take over and we could put together anywhere from 4 to maybe 7 days without any substantial precipitation. And especially the early part of the week looks pretty good. If we can get some of the drier air that's managed to intrude in here in the past week or two where we've had dew points in the 40s and such, that could really enhance drying faster than it would otherwise. It's still going to take a while, but it does look like things might be looking up finally.
There's an old adage that says if it rains on Easter Sunday, there will be 7 Sundays of rain. It didn't quite do that here in the Midwest, but that would be a 6-week cycle. Is there a climatological explanation for that cycle, too?
Probably not.
I was hoping so.
For one thing, Easter's a moving target, so
right.
That makes it tough from that standpoint. But we are in the period. I mean, May is typically the wettest month for Illinois, climatologically. Mm-hmm. And what's been unusual about this year, I think, is just how much, not necessarily the amounts of rain, but how frequently it's rained. In some cases, we haven't had a lot of rain in terms of quantity, but it's just rained every 2 or 3 days, and nothing ever gets a chance to dry out. The soils are saturated, so even if you get an inch rainfall, which in the middle of June would be welcome, it doesn't have anywhere to go. And so we're actually going to be taking a look at this here on the number of rain days and types of things as it relates to this particular growing season here in the next week or two. But in general, it's just I think that's been part of it. We've had a lot of rain in some areas, but not just that, but I think we've had a lot of days with rain that really have kept people out of the fields.
Indeed. One of the things that we'll need is a little bit of heat, but it looks like it'll be kind of cool for the weekend, and then the heat builds into.
Yeah, it'll be a slow warm-up or semi-slow warm-up this week. We'll start off cool, the temperatures below normal. You know, now we're looking at normal highs in the 70s, probably in the 60s this weekend. In fact, Sunday probably be the coolest day. But then by the end of next week, we should be up around 80 degrees. And that warmth, hopefully with some not too high dew points, we can keep the dew points down, which will enhance evaporation rates, and we can start drying out the ground. So, like I said, I think things are looking up, and hopefully there's some optimism here.
Steve, thanks much.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. That's this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.